Welcome to the Karuna Lab podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Harris, authenticity coach, mindset coach, and founder and CEO of the Karuna Lab. My mission is to empower you to trust your inherent worthiness and overcome all the mental and emotional barriers to you embracing your authentic self and living a life filled with purpose and joy. Each week, an episode will air featuring soulful insights, tips, and teachings showing you exactly how to improve your life by aligning your mindset and actions with your authentic self. You can manifest the life of joy, fulfillment, and purpose you deserve. If you're all about healing, growth, authenticity, and good vibes, you're in the right place. Welcome back to the lab, my friends. Today, we're diving into the ego and its six primary beliefs that shape our reality. In this episode, part one, we're going to talk about the first three beliefs. And then next week in part two, we'll talk about the last three. The ego is driven by the beliefs I'll cover in this episode. And when we allow it to take charge in our lives, it often leads us down a path of disconnection from ourselves and others, really painful judgment of ourselves and others, and it can foster a sense of separateness from our higher self, our spirit team, and the divine, or however you choose to connect with or understand it. For the sake of this podcast, I will use God and the universe interchangeably. Living a life purely or mainly defined by ego pursuits limits us, and it confines us to a world of competition and isolation. Inside the Karuna Lab, our goal is soul-centered living, and ego-centered living is a far cry from that. This is why it's so important to notice when and how we are living from ego and to heal our ego wounds so we can learn to live from an open-hearted, soul-centered place. But this episode isn't about casting judgment on ourselves for moments when our ego takes the wheel. We all have moments where our ego gets the best of us. It's part of the human experience. Ego has some very important use cases. There are parts of our ego that we owe our lives to. It's kept us safe emotionally, mentally, physically. But ego isn't actually very good at driving our lives forward. Unfortunately, we're so often conditioned by our society to live from our ego, to hoard resources, to see others as competition at best and opposition at worst. Each belief offers a lens through which we can see how we might limit our own growth and how, by shifting our perspective, we can embrace a more interconnected, grateful, and soulful existence. As we delve into these beliefs, consider how they manifest in your life. Which ones do you find yourself in an entanglement with? And which ones have you begun to see through? Remember, this journey is not about perfection. It's about progress. It's about kindness to yourself as you navigate the complexities of being human. So be patient with yourself. When you hear yourself or others in these beliefs, try not to judge so harshly. We all start somewhere. And at one point or another, these beliefs were useful. But if you're listening now, it's a sign it might be time to shed them. Also remember, living from a soul-centered place is a learning process. And we tend to forget that learning processes often start with unlearning. So let's get into it. We're going to start with a simple working definition of ego. The definition of ego that we will work with today will be the ideas that we construct about who and what we are. We know ego could go much deeper than that, and many a book has been written about the ego. And feel free to DM me. I can recommend you some if you like, but that's our simple definition for now. So the first ego belief is, I am what I have, or my possessions define me. This phase of ego reflects a common trap many of us fall into, where our worth becomes linked or even dependent on our material possessions. In our day-to-day lives, we can see this belief play out in so many ways, the most obvious being the cycle of consumerism. We see priming for it all over our society, from the planned obsolescence of technology to try-on haul videos all over social media. The overculture tells us consume, 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 and our economy is built on an infinite growth model with consumption as its lifeblood. This ego belief tries to convince us that if we get the watch, the car, the TV, the phone, the purse, the thing, then the person will like us, or we'll get accepted into that group, or we'll finally feel worthy. But what actually happens is we get the thing, we show it off a bit, we use it a bit, and then it's just another thing. It didn't lead to the happiness, joy, or fulfillment we thought it would. This ego belief is also what fuels unhealthy social comparison. We're constantly bombarded with images of other people's possessions and experiences, and that can lead us to feel like our life and our possessions we currently have aren't enough. That feeling drives the keeping up with the Joneses mentality and the constant comparison, and that constant comparison can erode your self-esteem and distract you from what you actually want and value. When we let our possessions become a primary source of our identity, losing them or failing to get new ones can lead to an existential crisis. Our sense of value and success should never be tied to what we own, because anything could happen to our stuff. Our sense of value and self-worth should be tied to who we are and how we move in the world. I think dismantling this belief is kind of the low-hanging fruit of the spiritual journey, where you start to feel like, oh, the more I have, the more I want, and there doesn't seem to be like an end in sight to this loop, like what's going on? You start to ask that question and you start to realize essentially through this constant dissatisfaction that material objects can't fill spiritual or emotional voids. Otherwise, there'd be no unhappy rich people. And as we know, many of the rich are deeply unhappy. But an interesting thing happens to this face of ego when you lean into your spiritual journey. You start to become more curious and naturally more fulfilled in your inner world. You start to understand that the voids inside you don't need to be filled with material objects. They need to be sat beside. They need to be sung to, danced in, loved on, and they will begin to fill themselves. We can overcome this belief in a few ways. First, simplify your life. Look around. Do you have a ton of stuff you don't use? Donate it. This can create space in your life for things that truly matter. And being generous feels good. This is something I deeply struggled with when I moved cities. Sometimes we can get fooled by the other side of this belief that I need to hold on to these things because what if I need them? And we unknowingly feed into this idea of lack and scarcity. Essentially, by hoarding these things, we're telling the universe, we're telling God, I don't trust you to provide me the things I need when I need them. Therefore, I have to hold on to this stuff because I might need it one day. When in actuality, A, you probably won't need it. And B, if you do need it, you have the power to source it again for yourself, just like you sourced the first one. That was a tough lesson for me to learn, but I did get there. Second, you can cultivate a gratitude practice. A gratitude practice will change your life. I promise. I promise. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. Just three things you're grateful for at some point in the day is a great start. You can write them, sing them, say them. It doesn't matter. Just get them out of your head and into the universe. Thirdly, define what really matters to you and connect with that. Invest time and energy into relationships and activities that align with your values. There's a completely free values quiz in the show notes that I absolutely swear by. It is not sponsored, and I have literally forced everyone I know to take this at least once. So please do yourself a favor and take it. It will give you your top five values completely free, and it's a really great quiz. Go take it. When we take the invitation to live a soul-centered life, the belief that you are what you have is one of the first things to go. When you use and consume with intention, quality over quantity becomes an obvious ideal. The second belief is, I am what I do, or my achievements define me. This face of ego invites us to attach our identity and worth to our actions and subsequent achievements or accomplishments. When we're stuck in this belief, we see the journey to the goal as devoid of value and only the goal matters. When you start to live as a more spiritual being, a more soul-led life, you see the signs, synchronicities, and lessons in the journey. While the goal is still important and motivational, it's not the only thing that matters. And getting stuck in this idea that it is will lead to burnout and a constant need for validation. Now, I always like to point out that validation is a human need. We're pack animals, and being shown validation biologically puts us at ease because it informs us that we are accepted by a group, which evolutionarily was the difference between life and death. But times have changed, and a healthy self-image requires a functional level of self-validation. There are a lot of steps to self-validation, like self-respect and self-acknowledgement, that need to be functional before self-validation becomes a habit. Thinking that doing more will equate to being more in all cases is a one-way ticket to burnout. Being in the throes of this belief can have us tying our productivity to our self-worth, which means when we're sick, when we're tired, when we're in pain, or we're just unmotivated and productivity is low, we feel guilty or inadequate or unworthy of our goals. When we act from a place of believing our value is tied to our output, we ignore the inherent worth that every human has, regardless of their accomplishments. This is another belief that has our society in a chokehold. We pedestalize problematic figures like Elon Musk and Bill Gates and Oprah because their quote-unquote hard work and wealth. But they didn't get to those positions on their own. A lot of nameless folks worked on their behalf, for them, and with them to make all that happen. And let's ask the question that I don't hear asked very often. What did Elon and Bill and Jeff and Oprah have to give up in order to get those positions? This is where your values come in. Do you value family? Because all those people are either never married or divorced. All achievements cost something. It's important to keep that in mind. When you know your values and are soul-led and authentic, you can easily discern whether achievements are too costly for you. We see this achievement versus value trade-off pretty often and pretty starkly in the entertainment industry. People like Dave Chappelle, who walked away from The Chappelle Show, Cat Williams, who recently came out and blew up the internet about never wanting to wear a dress. So those are two examples of people who, though they could have went on and had quote unquote higher achievements, they weren't willing to pay the price that was being asked for those achievements. And that was because they knew their values. They knew what felt authentic to them. And they stopped at that line because they knew where it was. We can begin to have this idea that if I just achieve enough, if my resume says enough, if I can just get enough appearances or promotions or followers or clients or subscribers or testimonials or whatever it is, then I will be enough. Then I will be taken seriously by XYZ person, or then that will make it so that XYZ people have nothing negative to say about me. That'll shut them up. And it's just not true. The example that I always look to when this ego belief really feels burrowed in my brain is Beyonce. She is so amazingly talented, yet there are still people who say she can't sing, she's not a good performer, whatever. And institutions like the Grammys that don't really reward her effort. She's won more Grammys than any artist ever, but she's never won Album of the Year, and she's only won the top four highest honors of the show once in her entire career. Someone saying Beyonce has no talent is, in my eyes, demonstrably false, even though her politic is a little problematic. But that goes to show you the nature of achievement. It's subjective. How do you feel about what you achieved? How do you feel about what you traded for the achievement? Because again, there's always a trade-off. Sometimes it's just time, but time is the only non-renewable resource in this realm. The key to healing this belief and reprogramming your mind is to remember that achievement is subjective. What may feel like a small achievement to you may be a huge win for someone else, and vice versa. For example, when you are depressed, just getting out of bed and brushing your teeth is a colossal task, huge. Whereas someone who isn't battling depression Brushing their teeth may be something they do absentmindedly as part of their morning routine. What matters is how you feel about yourself in relation to the achievement. Your achievements can improve your mind, your body, your spirit, or your life, but they are not you. You are you. And you would still be you without the job, without the idea, without the followers, without the kids, without the business, all the things. They exist to enrich and enhance your experience, not to become it. This facet of ego can really obscure that idea because we are constantly attempting to achieve, motivated by the false belief that if we stop achieving, we will lose our worthiness. We must do the work of remembering we are worthy even when we're doing nothing, even when we're resting. You are a human being, not a human doing. I was speaking to a client of mine about how we were brought up under this system of task-based love and attention. Task-based love refers to the idea that the easiest way for many of us to receive love and attention from our parents was to achieve. So that's what we did. And we never stopped because we learned and internalized that that is what the world wanted from us. So unlearning this ego belief takes some reparenting of the self and finding ways of meeting your own emotional needs. And learning to validate ourselves independent of external achievement. This is why the work of authenticity is so important. Because when you know who you authentically are and what you value, other people's idea of what success looks like for you starts to hold no weight at all. And that's when the magic happens. That's when you start to take risks in pursuit of what you want. And start bringing forward the magic of who you are into this world and allowing the universe to meet you and resource you and give you the things that you need to make your dreams come true. It's really a beautiful process when you give yourself over to it. The last belief for this episode, belief number 3, is I am what others think of me or my reputation defines me. This belief represents the invasive idea that your identity and self-worth are determined by other people's perceptions, opinions, and judgments of you. This idea can cause so many fears that stop us from living an aligned, authentic life. Other people's conclusions about us that we've internalized can be deeply hurtful. Conclusions like, you can't sing, you never finish anything, you never sound confident, or you're going to gain the weight back. A quick way to take the sting out of someone naysaying you or being discouraging is in your head, at the end of every one of their sentences, say, to you. So for example, if someone says, you can't sing, in your brain, you could say, to you. That individualizes their feedback and helps you remember that they are just one person and it's their opinion, not the truth about you. I love the saying, opinions are like buttholes, everyone has one. Because when we forget that, it can cause us to fiercely protect our reputation and unconsciously lean into people-pleasing and self-sacrificing behaviors that aren't in our best interest. Being aligned with the expectations of others at the expense of your own needs and desires is a recipe for misalignment of the self. And being out of alignment with yourself affects everything. One place I notice it show up really quickly in my clients' lives is in their decision-making. Their decision-making becomes overly influenced by how their choices will be perceived by others rather than what is genuinely best for them. When you're really deep in this cycle, it can almost feel like the same two options play out over and over. First option is you make the decision that you think others want you to make, and then you become completely resentful of everything else that happens throughout the whole process because you didn't actually want to be involved. Or you make the decision that you want to make, but your people-pleasing tendencies make you feel so guilty that you can't even enjoy your decision. The remedy to this is making decisions out of your authentic values. Knowing your values is a life hack, people, I'm telling you. For example, one of my top values is peace. One thing about me, I'm going to find that bright side and I'm going to prioritize my peace. And knowing this about myself helps me to make decisions from that place. So even if someone tells me that I missed out on an opportunity, if that opportunity was going to sow chaos in my life, because I value peace, it doesn't feel like a missed opportunity because the opportunity that is for me wouldn't sow chaos in my life. Another place I see this is people being afraid to honor their curiosity of esoteric tools like tarot and astrology. I grew up in the Bible Belt. I get it. Jesus is king. I love Jesus. I think he's a really cool guy. But I also think that spiritual practices can be personalized, unique, and they don't have to follow such a strict set of rules. Our spirituality can be on a spectrum. It can be fluid. I have learned over the past few years more Buddhist principles that changed my life and changed the way I see the world. I'm going to be honest, a little bit more than my Christian upbringing did. We can very much be in touch with the divine through different religions, through tarot cards, through astrology, through energy work. It's very common where I live for people to be afraid to branch their spirituality out, even though they feel the curiosity and they feel the call, because they are afraid of what other people will think of them for engaging in these practices. It took me a long time to get where I am, to get as comfortable with my spirituality as I am. I hid my love of tarot for a long time because I was in the grips of this ego belief. I truly thought what others thought of me was more important than what I thought of myself. I thought the way others wanted me to worship, the way others wanted me to be in community with God, was more important than the way that my soul, the way that my spirit wanted to be in community with God. And it wasn't until I chose authenticity, I chose myself, I chose my healing, that I started to be unapologetic about the tools that I use to heal. You can have that for yourself too. Self-acceptance is your birthright. But when we believe our reputation defines our humanity, our personhood, or our worthiness, we entangle our self-acceptance with the opinions, likes, dislikes, and judgments of others. And I'm just going to be super real for a minute. Half of these people whose opinions we're letting live in our head rent-free, they don't even like themselves. So of course they don't like you. Of course they don't believe in you. They don't have the capacity to hold that for themselves. It's so easy to become a prisoner to this and dim your own light and creativity for fear of judgment. This is the ego belief that keeps us in the life society, quote unquote, assigned to us. It keeps gay men in straight marriages. It keeps brilliant musicians in boardroom meetings. Societal expectations have hijacked our primordial need to be accepted into a group. But so often, societal expectations are in complete misalignment with our soul signatures and desires. Shedding this idea that your reputation defines you can be so healing. Protecting a rigid reputation doesn't allow space for your natural evolution as a human being. Anxiety about other people's opinion of you hinders your authentic self-expression. There's no good that comes from protecting this ego belief. Healing this belief looks like going really deep on what you believe about yourself. What are the origins of these beliefs? How have they been useful in the past? We know they were useful, otherwise they wouldn't have endured, and there's no shame in that. What do you hope others believe about you? And what are the barriers to you believing that about yourself? Next week, we'll cover the last three ego beliefs. Your insights and experiences are invaluable to the process of you creating the authentic life filled with purpose and joy and fulfillment that you deserve. Now that you've seen these first three ego beliefs, look out for them in media. Marketers love to exploit these because when we believe them, we don't question them. I'd be really interested to know which ones you struggle with and which ones you feel like you have an understanding or a mastery of. If you like the podcast, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps other people discover it. If any of these concepts have been useful to you, my Leo moon would really appreciate you letting me know that. You can send me a DM on Instagram or an email. I would love to hear from you and hear how you process this episode. I have a lot of amazing goodies coming down the pipe. I have a course that I'm working on. I'm working on creating videos for my YouTube channel. I'm working on creating articles for my blog, so I will have a lot of beautiful, nourishing, healing content coming at you all super soon. In the meantime, please take exquisite care of yourself, and I will catch you next week.